Chapter 8.
Interesting,
Supreme General Barkeef commented as he set his questus aside. He'd read the report twice, Arulani had noted, as she watched his eyes move back and forth across the text. The first time she'd ever seen him do that. Either he'd been trying to glean as much information as he could, or else he was stalling while he tried to figure out what to say and do about it.
You realize, of course, that stealing someone else's ship, under any circumstance, is a serious breach of regulations.
The Nicardune ships attacked us, sir, Thrawn said. I understood that regulations permit self-defense.
Absolutely, Barkeef said. And if you'd blown the damn thing to dust, no one would have given it a second thought. But capturing it?
He shook his head.
And you, Admiral? I know you and Thrawn have a long history, but I'm a little surprised that you agreed to be a part of this.
Actually, General, I made a point of refreshing my memory on the regulations before I accepted Captain Thrawn's proposal,
Arulani said, mentally crossing her fingers.
There's nothing that specifically says capturing an attacker's ship is a violation.
I think you'll find it falls under the general heading of preemptive strikes,
Barkeef said.
Which is definitely how certain of the Aristocra will interpret it once they hear about this. Some of them might even demand the ship be returned.
Without its crew, Thrawn said. That might be a bit awkward.
Arulani felt her throat tighten. More than just a bit awkward, given that the Nicardune crew was gone because they'd committed mass suicide minutes before the Chiss boarding parties breached the hatches. For a while, she'd rather hoped it had at least been a combination of murder and suicide, with perhaps the officers under orders to slaughter their warriors before taking their own lives. That would have indicated that it was only a few of the Nicardune that were that fanatical. But the medic team had concluded that all the deaths had been self-inflicted. What kind of compulsion and dominance did this Yiv the Benevolent hold over them that they would willingly go to such violent extremes?
True enough, Barkeef conceded. Well, until the syndics decide to write specifics into the law, I suppose we can treat it as a gray area.
He tapped the questus.
In the meantime, what kind of hellish night hunter nest have you just kicked over?
A night hunter nest that I believe will soon be hunting us,
Thrawn said grimly.
They clearly know about the ascendancy. They also feel confident enough in their own strength to slaughter a refugee ship right on our threshold. And, he gestured to the questus, they're already moving into our outer neighborhood.
Barkeef huffed out a breath, looking back at the questus as if the data on it might suddenly change to something less disquieting.
You're sure they've had contact with the Leo Aeon regime?
He asked.
I looked at all the indicators you marked, and I confess I can't see whatever it is you think you've found.
It's there, sir,
Thrawn said.
It's subtle, but it's there.
What we don't know, Arulani put in, is whether this is evidence that they've been to the Leo Aeon Heartworld itself, or whether they've just picked up some Leo Aoi art and artistic influences along the way from someone else.
That's why we need to go to the Heartworld in person,
Thrawn said.
I need to examine the local situation, and I can't do that from transmission analysis or even third-person investigator reports.
You know what the Syndicure will say about anyone going to the Leo Aeon regime,
Barkeef warned.
Especially you two.
That's why we wanted to keep it quiet, Arulani said. And the expansionary fleet does have a fair degree of flexibility in its duties.
Which I'm no longer in direct command of,
Bakif reminded her, glancing with an odd sort of wistfulness around his new Chila office. Arulani could sympathize. This office was bigger than his old expansionary defense fleet office on Naparar, as befit his newly exalted position as the Ascendancy's top general. But the office was on Chila, which meant that it was not only under the planet's frozen surface, but also within downwind spitting distance of the Sindicure and the rest of the Ascendancy's governmental centers. And just because the Aristocra weren't supposed to interfere with military matters didn't mean they were pleasant to be around.
"But you are in overall command of personnel in the fleet," Thrawn pointed out. "A directive from you would surely be acknowledged and carried out."
"The Springhawk is undergoing hull repairs, but we could take the Vigilant," Arulani said. "Thrawn could come aboard as an officer or even just a passenger and take a quick, unobtrusive look."
Pakeef snorted.
"You know what certain syndics think of your definition of unobtrusive."
He glanced at his desk monitor and gave a small snort.
"And by sheer coincidence, or perhaps not, two of those syndics have just arrived in my inner office."
Arulani's first impulse was to urge the general not to let them in, but it would be a useless gesture. Clearly someone had spotted her and Thrawn coming here. Just as clearly, the two syndics weren't going to go away just because the Defense Force's Supreme General told them to. Official policies of separation of duties or not, non-interference or not, the confrontation the syndics were obviously here for was going to happen. Might as well have it out now. Bakif had apparently come to the same conclusion. He tapped a key, and the door slid open.
"Welcome, syndics,"
he said briskly, as the three officers rose to their feet.
"How may I serve you?"
Arulani turned to face the newcomers. Mithurfia Niko, one of the syndics of Thrawn's family, led the way. That was standard procedure whenever the family wanted to deliver a message to the military regarding one of their own without tugging on any of the tangled web of interfamily politics. Striding along close behind him was Irizi Stalmustro, one of the syndics of Arulani's former family. She felt her eyes narrow. That was not standard procedure. Thurfian might be here to talk about Thrawn on behalf of the Myth, but she was no longer part of the Irizi family, which meant Zistalmu had no reason to talk about her to Bakif. But there was an even more interesting subtext about this whole thing. Given the intense rivalry between the Irizi and Myth, two syndics from those families who wanted to see Bakif on general military matters would normally have arranged to come one at a time, not together. Or was that the point? Could Thurfian and Zistalmu have worked up this joint meeting to underscore a high-level opposition to Thrawn's recent activities? A resistance that superseded family politics?
"Good day, General,"
Zistalmu said, inclining his head to Bakif.
"Admiral, Senior Captain,"
he added, making the same gestures to Arulani and Thrawn.
"Are we interrupting anything important?"
"I was discussing an upcoming mission with two of the expansionary fleet's finest officers,"
Bakif said.
"Really?"
Thurfian said, with a feigned enthusiasm that wouldn't fool a child.
"Given the presence of Captain Thrawn, may we assume this mission is connected to the report the fleet submitted to the Sindicure 3 days ago?"
Arulani stifled a curse. Normally, reports from the fleet could sit on the syndic's questuses for days or weeks without being read by anyone except their aides and the lower-ranking aristocra. At the moment, that was especially true of any report that didn't connect to the Chila attack investigation. Apparently, at least for these two, Thrawn's name garnered the same level of notice.
"We submitted several reports that day,"
Bakif said.
"Which one specifically are you referring to?"
You know perfectly well which one,
Sisalmu said, his eyes shifting to Thrawn.
The unauthorized intrusion into an alien system and the subsequent attack on alien ships in that system.
First of all, the Springhawk's mission to the Rapak system was not unauthorized,
Bakeef said.
As you know, there was an attack on the edge of the Dioya system.
An attack against aliens,
Sistalmu cut in.
Meanwhile, the question of the attack on Chila, an attack launched against actual Chiss citizens, has yet to be resolved.
I trust you're not suggesting the fleet is incapable of handling more than one investigation at a time,
Bakeef said, putting some stone into his voice.
Not at all,
Sistalmu said.
But if investigation was the goal, I would submit that Captain Thrawn's attack at Rapak went far beyond his orders and mandate. Yet I see no indication that the tribunal has been seated or even scheduled.
The Springhawk was attacked, Bakeef said. Standing orders allow him the right of defense. Within very narrow and sharply delineated limits,
Thurfian put in.
But that's the past, and a matter for a tribunal. Our major concern is for the future. So I ask again, does this proposed mission relate to the Rapak attack?
He threw an accusing look at Thrawn.
Time is not so long, nor memory so short, that we've forgotten his old Leo Eoin fiasco.
I'm hardly likely to forget it either,
Thrawn said quietly. Quietly, but Ar'alani could hear the hidden embarrassment and ache in his voice.
I trust you aren't here just to scrub at old wounds,
she put in, hoping to draw some of Zistalmu's attack in her direction. It was a waste of effort. Thurfian merely shot her a brief, unreadable look, then returned his attention to his primary target.
As I already stated, we're looking to the future, not the past,
he said.
We understand you claim to have found Leo Eoin paintings or sculptures or some such on that illegally seized ship. I trust, Supreme General, you're not seriously thinking of letting Captain Thrawn anywhere near the Leo Eoin regime. Why not?
Bakeef asked.
The Leo Eoi certainly hold their share of blame for what happened back then.
So you are sending him to the Heart World,
Sistalmu said, pouncing on the words like a ground lion.
Are you mad?
I believe the Nicardoon have moved into the Leo Eoin regime,
Thrawn said.
We need to know whether the Leo Eoi have been completely subjugated, or whether they still stand against their would-be conquerors.
We need to know nothing of the kind,
Thurfian retorted.
What happens outside our borders is none of our business, as I thought was made clear to you the first time you meddled in that region's affairs.
And when the Nicardoon arrive in the Ascendancy?
Thrawn asked.
If the Nicardoon arrive in the Ascendancy,
Thurfian shot back.
Exactly,
Sistalmu seconded.
Really, Captain Thrawn? Someone of your vaunted tactical expertise can surely see that if we were such an enticing target, they would have moved against us already. It seems obvious to me that the stories told about us out in the chaos have warned them away.
Unless they're waiting until they have enough strength to defeat us,
Bakeef said.
Fine,
Sistalmu said.
Let's look at that possibility, shall we? You claim the Nicardoon are subjugating other species and creating an empire, correct?
We've seen evidence of such activity, yes,
Bakeef said.
And controlling a conquered species requires force and the presence of arms, does it not?
Ar'alani felt a sour taste in her mouth, She could see where Zistalmu was going with this, as too could Bakif.
It may require less than you imagine, the general said. If the planet is sufficiently subjugated, a few monitoring ships and a small ground contingent could easily suffice.
Especially if they utilize a system of hostages or extortion, Aurelani added.
The point remains that as they move toward us, they continue to bleed ships and troops,
Zistalmu said.
So the longer they wait, the less likely they are to be a threat.
But Keith shook his head.
It doesn't always work that way.
But it was a losing argument, Aurelani could see from the expressions on the Syndic's faces. It might be a true argument, but it was also a losing one.
Yes, that too is a conversation for another day, Thurfian said. Since Captain Thrawn's ship is still undergoing repairs, and Admiral Aurelani's is about to leave on a diplomatic mission, it would seem that nobody will be traveling to the Leoaoan regime.
Excuse me,
Bakif said, shooting a look at Aurelani.
What diplomatic mission? The Ascendancy is sending a new ambassador to Urch, the capital of Urchivki,
Thurfian said.
As the Vigilant is one of the finest warships in the expansionary fleet, and as its commander is one of the fleet's finest officers,
he inclined his head to Aurelani.
It was decided that ship and commander would play host to Ambassador Boadil Pargasoy.
I see,
Bakif said, his tone going frosty.
And when were we to be informed of this decision?
You're being informed now, General,
Zistalmu said evenly.
The Vigilant will leave in 3 days.
Bakif looked at Aurelani.
Can you be ready that quickly?
We can, Aurelani said, trying to keep her own irritation out of her voice.
The Sindicure was not supposed to pull stunts like this. On the other hand, maybe they'd missed an angle. The Springhawk's repairs were supposed to take another 2 weeks, and Zistalmu was clearly expecting Thrawn to be out of commission that long. But much of the ship's damage was cosmetic, and as the Springhawk's captain, Thrawn could declare the ship ready to fly without those particular repairs being completed. If he did, by the time the Vigilant left for Urch, he could be nearly ready to pull the Springhawk out of Blue Dock and slip away for a surreptitious visit to the Leoaoan regime.
Sadly, though, Skywalker Abga has been reassigned,
Zistalmu continued.
However, as the Springhawk won't be going anywhere for at least a couple of weeks, Skywalker Ciri and Caregiver Thalias have been transferred to your command.
As has Captain Thrawn, Thurfian said. He served under you once, and I'm sure his contributions will be equally welcome this time.
I imagine he'll welcome a chance to visit Urch,
Zistalmu said, with a condescending little smile.
I understand their art galleries are the pride of the Urchivki people.
Aurelani suppressed a sigh. So they hadn't missed a bet after all.
I'm sure he will, she said. I'll be honored to have him aboard.
With a sudden intake of breath, Ciri's hands twitched one final time against the controls, and as Thalias looked out the viewport, she saw the star flares disappear into the starry background and the blue and white half-circle directly ahead. They'd arrived at Urch. Thalias scowled at the planet. Big deal. She stole a look at Thrawn, standing with Ambassador Ilparg behind Aurelani's command chair. Thrawn himself was unmoving and calm. Ilparg, in contrast, was opening and closing his hands and rocking slightly back and forth on his heels, clearly anxious to get to his new diplomatic post, and not very patient about the extra time it had taken the Vigilant to get here. Thalias stepped behind Chiri, rubbing gently against the tenseness of the girl's shoulder muscles and sending a mental glower in the direction of the grouchy ambassador. Chiri had had to make a small additional curve through the final section of the chaos leading into the Urch system, and the unexpected detour had made the vigilance several hours late. In Thalias' experience, that sort of thing happened quite frequently, and neither Aurelani nor Thrawn had blamed Chiri in the slightest for the delay, nor would any other reasonable person. Ilparg, unfortunately, didn't fall into that category. He was clearly used to the more well-defined travel parameters within the Ascendancy, and apparently had never understood that the term the Chaos wasn't simply someone's random idea of a good name. That made him an idiot. What made him a contemptible fool was that he hadn't been shy about voicing his opinions and criticisms within Chiri's hearing. Last night it had taken Thalias 2 hours of soothing, a good dinner and a hot bath, and every single one of her limited repertoire of lullabies to get Chiri to sleep.
"And what exactly is the delay now?"
Ilparg grumbled.
"We're waiting on the Urchiv Key controller to give us permission to launch your shuttle,"
Aurelani explained.
"Yes, I understand that,"
Ilparg said testily.
"Wouldn't it be best if I was actually in the shuttle when that permission comes?"
"Patience, Ambassador," Thrawn said.
Thalias winced. Of all the soothements Thrawn could have offered, patience was the one least likely to get him anywhere.
"I have all the patience I need, Senior Captain,"
Ilparg said acidly, glaring at Thrawn.
"What's needed here is results! Action and results! Since they don't seem to have noticed us, a second call would seem to be indicated."
"There," Thrawn said, pointing at a spot on the aft visual display.
"You see it?"
"Yes," Aurelani said. "You're sure it's Leo Aeoin?"
Thalias felt her breath catch in her throat. Something was going on out there. She could tell by the expressions on Aurelani's and Thrawn's faces, and by the matching tautness in their tones. Something was going on, and it wasn't good.
"Not 100%, no," Thrawn said. "Their ship design has changed since we saw it last. But there are enough similarities that I think it probable."
"What are you talking about?"
Ilparg demanded.
"What do the Leo Aoi have to do with anything? This is Urch!"
He shot a look at Chiri.
"Unless our navigator has gotten us lost again."
Thalias took a deep breath. Enough was enough.
"Excuse me, Ambassador?"
"This is Urch Planetarian Space Control,"
an alien voice erupted from the bridge speaker. It's Ta'arja, mangled almost beyond recognition.
"G's ship is not permitted to release shuttle. Repeat. Chi's ship will not release shuttle. Ambassador of Chi's not welcome to her chief key, nor to her planets or space."
"That's impossible,"
Ilparg sputtered.
"A treaty was endorsed. The Sindicure approved it."
He drew himself up to his full height.
"Admiral Aurelani, call him back,"
he ordered.
"Tell him you wish to speak with a senior member of the Tower Dimension."
"Quiet,"
Aurelani said, her face turned to the tactical display.
"Kindly do not address me in that—"
"I said quiet,"
Aurelani repeated. She hadn't raised her voice, but suddenly an icy chill ran down Thalias's back. Ilparg clearly felt the threat in her voice, too. He opened his mouth to speak, seemed to think better of it, and fell silent.
"What do you think?"
Thrawn asked.
"I count 8 ships visible," Aurelani said. "The Leo Aeoin, 6 probable Urchiv, and that one."
"The Nicardune frigate,"
Thrawn said.
"That's what I was thinking,"
Aurelani agreed, her voice going a shade darker.
That ridiculously large bridge viewport is a dead giveaway. The question is whether the Urchivki have been completely conquered, or if they are still in the same interdiction phase as the Pakash.
I guess the latter, Thrawn said. But on a practical level, as long as they're willing to do General Yiv's bidding, their precise status is irrelevant.
True, Arulani said. Still, if they're planning to destroy us, they are certainly taking their time about it.
Destroy us?
Ilpark gasped.
There's no real hurry, Thrawn said, ignoring the ambassador's outburst. We're already too deep in the gravity well for a quick escape, and their net pattern is coming together nicely behind us.
Personally, I think they're going for a mirror payback,
Senior Captain Wootra-O put in.
Interesting thought, Arulani said. Rather ambitious of them.
What's a mirror payback?
Chiri whispered, looking up at Thalias. Thalias shook her head.
I don't know.
It's a counter-thrust by one side that exactly corresponds to an earlier stroke by the other, Thrawn said, looking over at them. In this case, Captain Wootra-O is suggesting the Nicardoon hope to capture the Vigilant in the same way that we captured one of their patrol ships.
Chiri's shoulder muscles went rock hard beneath Thalias's fingers.
No, she breathed. They... no...
Don't worry. They won't, Arulani said.
She hesitated a moment, then rose from the command chair and walked over to Chiri's navigation station.
You had trouble getting into the system, Skywalker Chiri, she said in a low voice.
I'm sorry,
Chiri breathed.
It was just...
Yes, I know, Arulani said,
a distracted sort of soothing drifting across the tightness of her voice.
I'm not blaming you. This part of the chaos is particularly nasty to navigate. My question is, just how solidly are we blocked in?
In other words, Thrawn added, coming up beside Arulani, are there particular exit vectors that would get us out faster and easier than any of the other routes?
Just take your time and think, Chiri,
Thalias said.
Being right is better than being fast.
She felt Chiri take a deep breath, watched the girl's hands move hesitantly across the controls and small displays of her board.
This way,
she said, moving her finger to a line about 30 degrees from the Vigilant's current heading.
That's not the way we came in, Arulani said.
Because we would have to circle around even more,
Chiri said, some pleading in her voice.
And there were some big asteroids in the way. Ambassador Ilpark was already mad at me for how long it was taking.
It's all right, Chiri. It's all right,
Arulani said. This time the soothing sounded more genuine.
We just need to get out of here. Preferably faster and farther than they can easily follow us. Doesn't matter if it takes us out of the way to get back to the Ascendancy. Helm? Do you have the vector?
Yes, ma'am, the pilot confirmed.
Problem,
Wootra-O said.
We're going to have to angle outward to get to it. If we do that, we'll be moving right into their net.
Arulani pursed her lips.
Not necessarily.
We won't necessarily move into their net?
Wootra-O asked, frowning.
We don't necessarily have to angle outward,
Arulani corrected. Pulling out her questus, she scribbled briefly on it.
Thrawn?
She asked, handing it to him. Thrawn peered at the questus.
The Vigilant wasn't really designed for this kind of maneuver, he warned, as he handed the device to Wootra-O. But I think it can handle the strain.
What strain?
Ilpark croaked, a layer of suspicion coating the fear in his voice.
What are you proposing?
Don't worry about it,
Wootra-O advised, tapping the questus. Out of the corner of her eye, Thalia saw the image and data appear on one of the helm displays.
Meet Commander Octremo?
I see it, ma'am, the pilot said hesitantly. Are you sure about this?
They want to take the Vigilant intact, Aurelani reminded him. One way or the other, this guarantees that doesn't happen. Execute.
Yes, ma'am.
Visibly bracing himself, Octremo keyed his board. And with a sudden muted roar, as the thrusters ran to full power, the Vigilant leapt forward, aiming straight for the planet in front of them. Ilpard gave a strange sort of squeal.
Admiral!
He bleated.
What are you doing?
Course change one,
Aurelani said over the rumble.
3, 2, 1.
Outside the viewport, Urch moved off to the left as the Vigilant shifted its vector. At least, Thalias thought dimly, through the agonized pounding of blood in her head, they were now headed for the edge of the planet instead of straight toward its center. This way, the resounding crash would take a little longer to happen.
Urchiv ships moving in pursuit!
Wootra-O called from the sensor station.
Liu Aoen hanging back. Nikar Dune ramping up power. Looks like he's going to try to cut us off.
Increase speed 5%,
Aurelani ordered.
Course change 2. 3, 2, 1.
The planet moved a little more to the side, and now it looked like they were only going to cut through the edge of the atmosphere. Thalias tried to remember if she'd ever heard of a Chiss Night Dragon running at high speed through a planet's atmosphere, but she couldn't.
Urchiv ships picking up speed,
Wootra-O announced.
But unless they've got a lot more in reserve, there's no way they can catch us. Ah, they figured that out. Dropping back.
Any sign of intercept craft from the surface or behind the disk?
Aurelani asked.
Nothing detectable,
Wootra-O said.
At this point...
She broke off as the Vigilant gave a sudden lurch.
Entering atmosphere, Admiral, Octremo said. Cutting deeper. Hull temperature starting to rise. No danger yet.
But there would be, Thalias knew. Her physics classes were only a vague memory, but she remembered enough to know there were good reasons why ships didn't move through planetary atmospheres at this speed.
What about the Nikar Dune?
Aurelani asked.
A little unclear. The turbulence is interfering with the sensors,
Wootra-O said.
But I think he's falling behind too.
The buffeting was growing stronger. Thalias knew she should find a seat and strap in, but she could sense Chiri's fear and didn't want to abandon the girl. She could almost hear the Vigilant groaning under the unfamiliar stresses and heat and pressure. Imagination, of course, but still she could hear the ship's agony.
Last course change,
Aurelani said abruptly into the muted cacophony.
Skywalker, get ready.
I am,
Chiri said, her voice trembling.
Course change. 3, 2, 1.
Octremo keyed his board, and the Vigilant angled away from the planet one final time. The battering began to lessen, and suddenly the haziness around the stars cleared, and the groaning faded away. They were again in the welcome vacuum of space, driving hard along the vector Chiri had pointed them to. The seconds ticked by, the Vigilant driving even harder toward the distant stars.
Clear for hyperspace,
Octremo announced.
Skywalker,
Aurelani called.
Ready,
Chiri called back.
How far do you want to go?
As far as you can take us without stressing yourself,
Aurelani said.
Ready? Go!
The stars flared, and then faded into hyperspace swirl, and they were once again safe.
You can let go now,
Thrawn said. Thalias blinked, only then realizing that somewhere along the line her grip on Chiri's shoulders had transferred into a grip on the back of the girl's chair. With an effort, she unlocked her fingers and took a step back.
We did it,
she said.
We did, Thrawn agreed. We of the fleet like to think of ourselves as heroes. Often, though, the true heroes are those who design and build the warships we take into battle.
There wasn't supposed to be any battle!
Ilpar growled. With the danger past, he was rapidly returning to his normal pomposity.
What was the meaning of all that?
The Nicardoon are attacking other worlds, Thrawn began.
The meaning?
Arulani interrupted him.
The meaning, Ambassador, is that this was a trap. Someone wanted to capture a Chiss ship, and they invited you to Urch to make it happen.
She smiled, just slightly.
You were the bait.
I am not bait,
Ilpark insisted.
Not for anyone. Not for the Urchivki. Not for these... What did you call them?
Nicardoon, Thrawn supplied.
And not for the Nicardoon,
Ilpark bit out.
And the Leo Aoi?
Arulani asked. Ilpark frowned at her.
What did the Leo Aoi have to do with it?
One of their ships was here, Arulani said. And they certainly didn't do or say anything to keep the Urchivki back from us. In fact, it looked to me like they were part of the net the Urchivki were setting up behind us,
Wutra'o added.
Oh, they were they?
Ilpark said, glaring at the rolling hyperspace swirl outside the viewport.
It certainly looked that way to me,
Wutra'o said.
Perhaps we should swing by the Leo Aeon Heartworld before we return to the Ascendancy,
Arulani suggested.
Talk to them. Maybe ask for an explanation?
Ilpark turned cold eyes to her.
You think we should do that, do you?
Arulani lifted a hand.
I merely offered the suggestion.
And an excellent suggestion it is,
Ilpark said.
Except that I don't intend to ask for an explanation. I intend to demand one.
He pointed dramatically toward the hyperspace swirl.
The Leo Aeon Heartworld, Admiral Arulani, at your best possible speed.
He held the pose another moment, then gave an equally dramatic turn and stalked off the bridge.
Interesting, Thrawn murmured. I assume that was on purpose.
You wanted to see the Heart World, Arulani said. Now we're going to. Make a note, Senior Captain,
Wutra'o added.
You can ask and suggest and show why your ideas make sense, but when politicians are involved...
She waved toward the viewport in an imitation of Ilparg's earlier posture.
That is how it's done.